Welcome, welcome into what may be considered a surprise, a podcast we knew we'd be doing, but we didn't know the teams that would be in it. And folks, I'm here with, of course, Glenn Logan, the managing editor of the Sea of Blue, and Ken Howlett, the editor of Sea of Blue. And folks, I didn't know, I'm pleasantly surprised, but I didn't know we'd be getting to have this glorious of a podcast. Kentucky's in the Final Four.
Wow. That's all I can say. Wow. That's all I've got for you, man.
Well, I mean, you know, a couple huge, huge wins. We thought Ohio State maybe too strong, Jared Sullinger too much, the three-point shooting too much. They did exactly what we thought that Kentucky would do, and that is Jared Sullinger, go to work. We're going to pistol Pete you. We're going to cover you one-on-one, and what happens, happens. We're not going to let you get off from three-point land, and Glenn, that's what they did, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, it worked as well as it possibly could have. Ohio State was in a difficult spot there. I don't think they faced anything quite like that all year long because you almost have to double-team Sullinger. But Sullinger hasn't faced a guy as big and strong as Harrelson is, I don't think, all year long. And not only that, I think Josh Harrelson's footwork has really vastly improved, especially defensively, and he really had that on display for everybody to see. And as a result, he was able to do great things defensively. He bothered Sullinger, although Sullinger still got his points. And then offensively, he scored, which was a bit of a surprise, but you know, he's been proving that recently. So yeah, you're right. That's exactly what happened.
And Coach Cal's been talking about how Harrelson changed his attitude, changed his mindset, changed his body, and he's got a little roughneck in him. He's got a little Jamal McGlure big cat in him. I loved seeing him get bumped by Sullinger, not getting a call and turn around and letting Sullinger know, you're not going to push me around like that, by flinging one right off his chest like a Nolan Ryan fastball.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Josh has just been the turnaround or metamorphosis or whatever word you want to use that he has experienced is, I don't know that I've ever seen a player do that, at UK anyway, come from being kind of soft and wants to play outside to becoming an enforcer, a Jamal McGlure, Winston Bennett type. I mean, it's really great to see. I think Calipari is kind of deflecting, you know, the kudos. And I think that's right. I think this is really a lot, 90% probably Josh Harrelson. And thank God for that tweet he sent out criticizing Coach Cal for not congratulating him on his 26 rebounds in the blue-white game. Because without that having happened, he may not be the player that he is now because he wouldn't have gotten in trouble. He wouldn't have been forced to do the 6 a.m. workouts with, I believe it was Kenny Payne. And so it's just kind of a happy circumstances for Kentucky, I guess, making the best, chicken salad out of you know what. So yeah, he's just been phenomenal, almost unbelievable. But it's come to the point now to where we're expecting it. I expect to see that Saturday night against UConn, that toughness, that, kind of, you don't mess with me or I'll knock you down kind of attitude. But I think it's great. You know, I'm just glad he didn't throw any punches. You know, as long as he doesn't take it over the limit, I'm all for him being kind of a leader in that way.
Yeah, and I also loved when he got right up and let Harrison Barnes know, hey, you're not going to – don't foul me hard or I'm coming right back at you. I thought that was a strong statement. One of my favorite, I guess, during a basketball game but non-basketball moments since Ramel Bradley let the big Aussie know, hey, Andrew Bogut, I don't care how big you are. I'm from Brooklyn, and you ain't going to push me around. It was kind of one of those moments. And, Glenn, let's talk a little about Brandon Knight. I mean, this guy, I don't care if he misses 100 shots in a row. When there's 10 seconds left on the clock, he is a stone-cold killer. No, I mean, total ice water in his veins. What a shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the great things about Brandon, he's a bit of a volume shooter, which is something, you know, we've been used to here at Kentucky a little bit when we had Bradley and Crawford back in the day. But quite honestly, he really also does a lot of other things besides shoot the ball. I mean, he passes the ball. He generally takes pretty good care of it. Yeah, he will turn the ball over some, but quite honestly, as much as it's in his hands, you're going to get that. That's just part of the game. And he really does a fantastic job of providing options off the pick and roll. I mean, it's amazing to see when we watch these guys play this game how difficult it is for them to guard Brandon Knight on the pick and roll because he's got so many things that he can do. And Calipari has completely refined the pick and roll at Kentucky to be just an incredible art form. And I really, I mean, I always thought Billy Donovan played a great pick and roll, but not anymore. I mean, not compared to Calipari. What he's done today, or what he's done this year with Josh Harrelson and Brandon Knight. And you're right about him. I mean, Knight is just absolutely a cold-blooded shooter. He's completely fearless. He knows what it means to miss game-winning shots. He missed about four of them earlier this year.
He missed Florida, Arkansas, and Ole Miss. He missed all three of them.
Yeah, so he's comfortable with missing that shot. He knows what that feels like. And now he knows what it's like to make a few.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have been more impressed.
I'm sorry, BC. Let me throw this real quick. I think that, you know, the fact that he's missed so many shots has made him, he knows now if he misses the shot, you know, he still lives, he breathes, his family still loves him. You know, it's not the end of the world. And so he's not afraid to miss. And I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and let's move on to the North Carolina game. All of a sudden, the game, Kentucky now, after that performance against Ohio State, all of a sudden Vegas says, holy cow, these guys are for real. We're making them the favorites now. They still carry that scrappy underdog mentality. North Carolina had beaten them earlier in the year, and North Carolina had only gotten better since they made the Kendall Marshall switch. And Kentucky came out and won, Ken. They flat-out toughed them. But two, Calipari out-coached Roy Williams, period.
Well, I think he's outcoached. I think he outcoached Thad Matta. You know, and the thing about it is outcoaching. Really, what is that? I think that what Calipari did is Matta never changed. They never changed anything they tried. I didn't notice it anyway. Ohio State never changed anything they tried to do in response to Liggins just shutting down Kraft. And I thought that was one of the couple of main keys to Kentucky winning that game. I thought that was a really, really great move. It ditto North Carolina putting Liggins on Marshall. And also in the second half, you keep waiting if I'm Roy Williams on that team, Tyler Zeller touches the ball every time down the floor because they're such a poor outside shooting team. Barnes hit a couple of threes for him, but that was really about it. But I don't understand why Coach wouldn't utilize to take advantage of a guy who's got that hook shot that's almost unstoppable that he makes, and he makes it at a very high rate. But anyway, as far as Calipari, I thought his game plan going into each of these games was perfect. I thought he managed the foul situation against Ohio State perfectly. Didn't have that problem against North Carolina, but it's hard to come up with any missteps that this coaching staff has taken, really in this entire tournament. To be honest with you, but yeah, I think he's done a fantastic job. We're starting to see articles actually pop up throughout the blogosphere talking about, hey, he just can't recruit. He's not only a recruiter, this guy can coach a little too. And so that's good to see because he's been stuck with that label as only a recruiter, and I just think that's total garbage. There's no way you can do what he's done in his career and not know, you know, what you're doing when it comes to coaching from the sidelines.
He's been incredibly impressive. And one of the reasons, Ken, that, Tyler Zeller didn't get that many touches because a lot of times he was 16 feet away from the basket because Josh Harrelson was putting his rump on him and shoving him out. And I love seeing that. Let's go to the end of fast forward to the end of the game. A couple really key plays. One, the Brandon Knight three. Two, DeAndre Liggins blocking a shot at one end and then getting the 4-point, the two possession three at the other end. Glenn, those plays all magical. And two of those, a guy that didn't get the credit that he deserves on both the Brandon Knight three and the DeAndre Liggins three, the guy that made those happen, number one, Darius Miller, getting into the paint, drawing the defense, kicking out. What a great set of events for Kentucky. And DeAndre Liggins, what can you say about this guy? Gets beat on defense, doesn't give up on the play, says, hey, I know I got long arms, I know I got a long stride, I can catch him and trap him from behind. That's exactly what he did. And then to have the confidence to put up that big three at the end, what an incredible and, you know, Brandon Knight, again, we know he's stone cold. He put up the three also. But what an incredible end of the game for DeAndre Liggins, Glenn.
Yeah, I mean, the amazing thing to me, I'm glad you mentioned Darius Miller's two assists there, because one of the things that you might have thought was a mistake in the Ohio State game is that he put Miller in the first half with two fouls late in the half. But there was a reason for that. He knew he could trust Darius Miller not to pick up that third foul, and he needed that extra score in the game, and he needed that extra defender in the game. He couldn't go to his bench that deep, and he knew he couldn't. So I think one of the things that people don't realize the value of Miller, because he plays so many different roles. And in the Ohio State game, I mean, Miller really, really bothered Buford. He just really bothered him. Several times Buford tried to put shots up, and Miller was so close to him and his arms were so long that the shot went awry. I mean, I remember one three-point shot from the left wing that Miller almost blocked, and Buford adjusted it and shot some kind of a brick that barely drew iron. I mean, it was never going in. So that's the kind of thing that Miller brings. He brings all the little – he's become – in a way, he's almost replaced Josh Harrelson as the guy that does the little dirty little things. And Josh Harrelson is kind of almost in a weird way become the star of the team, and it's strange to see, but it kind of – you can almost look at it like that.
And you're dead on. I think Darius Miller – does things that don't necessarily get him on the stat sheet or don't make your eyes pop. But, again, those two assists. Darius Miller hasn't gotten the credit for those two assists that I think he deserves. And it was a little disappointing in that, because those are two huge plays. And Ken, before we go on to the Final Four, I want to talk just a little more about DeAndre Liggins. And here's why. Here's a guy at the beginning of the year, when he had the ball in his hands, you were thinking, pass, pass, pass. This is not
right.
You want the offense going through.
Right.
All of a sudden, right, he may be one of the more dynamic offensive players on the court, because now he's found his stroke from three.
He has found it. Go ahead.
And he's got it. Well, he's got an 18-foot jumper. He's as good as anyone on the team at getting into the paint and getting fouls. I mean, his long legs and big body let him get in there and bang. I love how he uses the glass a la Tim Duncan on those 12, 14-foot jump shots. I've just been incredibly impressed with his offensive game recently.
He is just becoming a shot maker. And if you look at DeAndre's numbers, he started, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but he started really, he was making 38, 39% of his overall shots up until about 6 or 7 weeks ago. And he started trending up higher. He started making 4 of 7, 3 of 5. And he's been doing that consistently every game. And now he's starting to get growing some confidence. And Calipari's calling his number more often. And the kid's just full of confidence right now. Shooting from the outside or driving the ball to the hole. He, you know, that's one thing. I think we noticed the three-pointers more because they're worth more. But he is really, really good driving to the basket. He picks fouls, he picks up fouls, or he makes the shot. But, you know, it's something that's kind of funny is, I don't know, this goes way, way back to the beginning of the season. Some reporter asked Coach Calipari about the shot makers on the team, guys, you know, so many three-point shooters and all this kind of thing. And somehow he worked it around to where he trusted, you know, if he had a last-second shot, he'd want DeAndre Liggins to take it. Now, he said that back November, December. And so there's something that Calipari saw in him, either practice or through his first year on the team, that told him this guy can make that shot. He's capable of making that shot. And I think that's part, when your coach believes in you, it helps a whole lot. You know, if you're doubting yourself, but you hear your coach publicly say, you know, I want this guy taking the last shot, which is basically what Calipari said, that's got to help you. Now, it didn't really show early in the season, but there's something's clicked. He's got his stroke going. He is a dangerous, dangerous offensive player right now. The shooting his threes well over 40% and making well over 50% of his two-point shots. This team wouldn't be here on top of the just unbelievable, unbelievable defense that he's playing on these guys. I'm really, really, really anxious to see him go up against Walker on Saturday night.
It should be really, really exciting. And Walker's the kind of guy, you're not going to stop him. You're just not going to stop him. What you have to do is disrupt him. You have to not let him get into his shots easily. You have to chase him off screens. And you have to make him work for everything. He's going to get it. You just got to make him work for it. You can't give him anything easy. And Glenn, let's talk about where we are now, the Final Four. And Kentucky goes from scrappy underdog against against Ohio State to the favorite to win the whole thing in a matter of one weekend. Does Calipari change anything, or does he try to keep that scrappy underdog mentality, Glenn?
Well, I'm sure he'll try to keep it because it's worked. I mean, you don't change what works, not in the middle of the season, or not in the middle of the tournament. You want to keep that. You want to find some way to convince these guys that they're not the favorite, and that's what he'll do. He'll remind them of the severe beatdown that the Walker-led UConn team delivered to us back in Maui. And he won't let them forget that. He'll be talking about that. And he wants to push that. That's what he wants them to have in mind when they go out on the court. He wants them to remember the unpleasant feeling of losing big time to Walker out in Maui and to UConn. He wants them to keep that right there. Because if the chip on the shoulder thing has been working, you don't want to mess with that. You want to make sure that chip stays there, and if possible, make it, you know, even a little bit
bigger,
more significant. Yeah. And the other thing, I don't know. In fact, I kind of doubt that he's going to put Liggins on Walker for the exact reason you said. Walker's going to score, and Liggins has already tried to stop him once and failed completely. So he may decide, and I'm thinking this is actually the high probability, to put Walker on Jeremy Lamb, their number two scorer. Liggins on Lamb, their number two scorer. And that would be an interesting move because I do believe Liggins can frustrate and shut down Jeremy Lamb. He is a freshman. And while he's very poised and very skilled, DeAndre Liggins is a junior, and he's a tough guy. And I'm not sure Lamb has faced this kind of a threat before defensively. So I would look for him to put Liggins on Lamb and tell Deron Lamb maybe to go out and guard Walker the best he can. Look, just get in front of him, put your hand up, frustrate him any way you can. Don't foul him, and, you know, he's going to get his.
All right, Ken, we might as well get to it. You know, let's have a prediction and why. A prediction for UK-UConn, why. Maybe give us an offensive key and a defensive key. Ken, who do you got and why?
Well, I think Kentucky's going to win this basketball game. And the reason is, this team, when Kentucky played UConn last time, UConn scored 42 points in the paint and just had their way. Kentucky, it was the worst defensive performance Kentucky had the entire year by a long ways. Even forgetting about Kentucky's improvement on the offensive end, simply the fact that they were defensively, it was that they were indifferent. It was like they were totally confused. There's just no way that's going to happen again. And I really, really like the fact that this team seems to be taking very seriously the get them back. The revenge tour, Josh Harrelson's talked about it. These guys know. A friend of mine asked me the other day, I guess it was yesterday, said, well, the only thing I'm worried about is them being overconfident. How can a team be overconfident that had their hat? It was 17 points, and it wasn't even that close, guys, and you all know that. They just absolutely destroyed Kentucky in that game. And so I really like the chip on the shoulder angle, the underdog angle, and I think that's going to play a big part in it. But as far as personnel-wise, I think Glenn makes an interesting point. I don't disagree with Glenn very often, but I might disagree a little bit here. I don't generally think teams that are based on kind of one huge type of star player generally are going to win in a game like this. There are exceptions, Carmelo Anthony, Danny Manning in past history. But Walker, I think, is good enough to do that. I think he is. I like him that much that he's good enough to almost kind of will or win the game for himself. That's why I think Liggins is going to. That's why I think that Calipari will probably put Liggins on him because I think he's good. I could be wrong, and Glenn could be right. Probably that's probably what will. It's probably actually what will happen. We'll see. But you know, I just think defensively, it's all about defense to me. This run is all based on defense and making big shots at the end, and I think that that's going to be the difference in the game. Connecticut, just as Ohio State experienced, the Kentucky defense, something they have not faced all year, even including Louisville, Rick Pitino's Louisville team, who was a great defensive team most of the year. I think defense does it for Kentucky. I think Harrelson is not even 5%. He wasn't 5% of the player in November that he is now. Going up against Oriaki, who had a pretty good game, had his way. That's not going to happen. So I'm looking at it from that angle. Kentucky is just so much better defensively. I just don't think Connecticut's going to have the offensive weapons to hang with the Cats.
Glenn, same question to you.
Well, I think Kentucky's going to win, and I think they'll win primarily because they won't be able to score enough points. I believe Kentucky will shut down their secondary scores. And even though, you know, for all I know, Kemba Walker might get 40, but realistically, if Kentucky does a good job and forces Kemba to take some outside shots, Kemba is a streaky outside shooter. He can make a lot of them, but he tends to really settle in around the 30% to 40% range, 3-point shooting, and he's a volume shooter. So where Kemba's the most dangerous is in the paint. And if Kentucky can keep him out of the paint, and I believe they can, or at least as much as anybody can, I think that's going to be a problem for them to score points. Offensively, I think the key to Kentucky's offense is going to be patient and make the Huskies play their defense. Kentucky has proven time and again that they can wear teams down offensively by just being patient, running pick and roll.
That's
they're
right.
Going to eventually get clean looks. And when Kentucky gets clean looks, it's over. You can't give them a single clean look. They have too many good shooters. There's almost nobody will miss shots for Kentucky if they get a wide open look. So that's going to be the big key, offensive patience offensively. Now, defensively, the key is going to be how to shut down Jeremy Lamb. Jeremy Lamb is the only other player on that team who can score consistently. Alex Oriaki, Charles Okwundu, none of these guys have been able to really put up consistent numbers all year. Without Jeremy Lamb, UConn isn't in the Final Four, let alone, you know, close to, you know, within 2.5 points of Kentucky. So I got to tell you, the key is Jeremy Lamb. Whoever plays him, whether it's Liggins or whether it's Miller, whoever it is, has got to shut him down. And that's going to be a challenge because the kid's very talented.
No, and he is, and I was watching him in the Big East tournament in their first couple games. I say, man, this guy, if he's not on the team with Kemba Walker, we're talking about this guy maybe is a potential lottery pick. But I think he's been overshadowed by Kemba Walker because he does it all so well. I really, really love Jeremy Lamb's game. Definitely an NBA player. I, too, am going to take Kentucky, and I think that's because, and I don't know if I could have said this at the beginning of the year, but the way they've come together, I don't know that you can give UConn the edge on any part other than Kemba Walker over whoever he plays against. It seems like Kentucky's going to have four guys that are as good or better at every position other than, you know, wherever Kemba Walker plays, where you call him a combo guard, call him whatever you want to call. And even, you know, off the bench, Kentucky has – you know, maybe one great player in Knight, but they have six or five other very good players in Liggins and Miller and Harrelson and crew. I mean, they have five very good players and one great player, whereas I don't know that outside Lamb there are a lot of other really good players on UConn. And that's why I kind of think Kentucky's going to win, because I think UConn would say straight-up trade Liggins for anyone on their team. They might trade Oriaki for Harrelson the way he's been playing recently. So I think Kentucky definitely has the numbers edge as far as good players. The way DeAndre Liggins is playing, the chip on Harrelson's shoulder, Brandon Knight's ice cold shooting. Plus, this is Calipari's best coaching job he may have done since the Padilla Travioso Canby UMass teams, because he's done an incredible job. I don't see it stopping now. And so I'm going to go ahead and take them on into the finals and take on. I've got real quick. We don't have to break down the other one. I've got them taking on Butler and winning in the finals. Who do you have them taking on in the finals, Glenn?
I think it'll probably be Butler. Butler's got the experience. I love what Shaka Smart has done. I love his team. And they may pull the upset. It's entirely possible. I wouldn't bet on that game if I were a bet man, which I'm not when it comes to college sports. But I will tell you that I do think that Butler's experience is probably going to be the difference.
Ken, Butler, VCU.
You know, I think that my head tells me that to agree with both of you guys and go with Butler. And who I think may be the best young coach that I've ever seen in Brad Stevens. But I tell you what, Joey Rodriguez, who is VCU's point guard for the Kansas game, he said this the other night on ESPN Radio. I'm assuming he's telling the truth. You know, I don't know why he would lie about this. But he did say that before the game, when they're shaking hands before the opening tip-off, that Marcus Morris, one of the Morris twins, walked up to him, shook his hand, and said, "Nice run, but it's time to go home." And he, and Jason Smith or whoever was interviewing him on ESPN asked how that affected him, and he says, "Well, we were already keyed up and motivated, but that just sent us over the top." You know, everybody's picking Butler. Everybody's dissing VCU, I think, on this – not dissing VCU, but, you know, picking Butler. I'm going to go with the Rams. I'm going to go with Shaka. I'm going to go with the Rams. I think they have got it going on right now. Their stuff, they're playing defense, they're doing all the things they have to do to win, and all that's cliche-ish, but that's what they're doing. They're forcing teams into playing their pace. They're forcing teams into doing what it is they want them to do on the defensive end, which is what it's all about. I'm going to take the Rams.
And so in the finals there, Ken's got VCU and Kentucky. Glenn and I both VCU and Butler, or UK and Butler. I really think Butler, as good as they've been, Kentucky is a nightmare kind of matchup for Butler because Kentucky can stop them from getting in their offensive flow. And because they kind of play at that pace where they need to kind of get in a certain rhythm and make so many passes, once you start disrupting that flow, Glenn, it's bad news. Bad news.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Kentucky over Butler.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, quite honestly, if we're assuming Kentucky gets past UConn, I think they can handle Butler. Butler has two key players, Matt Howard and Shelvin Mack. And if you can control those guys, and Kentucky has the players that can, both size-wise and talent-wise, then I think Butler would have difficulty.
Ken, you picked VCU, but regardless, Kentucky, I think, presents matchup problems for both VCU and Butler, specifically VCU, because I think that's one of those situations where you put Liggins on Joey Rodriguez, and Joey Rodriguez,
right,
as good as he's been, Liggins will take him out of his game. I mean, I think Kentucky really creates big-time matchup problems for a lot of teams because they are now, at the end of the year, so good at every position. You can't take anything away from Harrelson. You can't take anything from Harrelson. Can't take anything from Liggins. Can't take anything from Lamb. Can't take anything from Miller. And so on and so on. Do you see, who do you have winning your finals?
Yeah, I've got Kentucky over VCU or Butler, either team. I think Butler, Matt Smith, their big guy down low. Harrelson, I think, eat him up. We'll just eat him up. And then Kentucky, as far as VCU, it's just, Kentucky is not going to let VCU, they're so good at running their, doing what they want to do offensively as far as pace. And I don't think VCU will have, I think they shoot too good of a percentage to allow VCU to get out and run, and which kind of feeds their whole game.
All right, well, guys, that's going to do it. That's going to wrap it up for the Sea of Blue Final Four podcast featuring Kentucky. We didn't think it was going to happen, but it has. You know what? A lot of people are now saying this team is going to go down as one of their favorite teams ever, one of the most loved teams ever. And Glenn, Ken, we'll both talk on this real quick. I mean, have you ever seen a player reach Chuck Hayes-like status in as short amount of time as Josh Harrelson has? This guy is now fully entrenched as a University of Kentucky legend from here to eternity.
No, I've never seen anything just like it. I mean, it's remarkable. It's one thing to be Chuck Hayes, who was a talented high school player. He was a four-star out of high school. He was a good player. Everybody knew he was going to be good. And it took him 4 years to get like this. Josh Harrelson, I mean, he's been there for 3 years, but he's almost been, you know, a bookend for like, I don't know, two and a half, well, 2 years up till now. And I, whatever has clicked, I've never seen that dramatic improvement in my life in a player ever. And I don't ever expect to see it again.
I agree with Glenn, everything he said. And here's something to chew on, something that I've thought about, is Harrelson has never, ever in his whole life played this position before, ever. Not at the high school level, not at the junior college level. He's never played the center spot. And so I think it's a combination of that, him learning the position, plus him dedicating to kind of revamping his body. And you add just kind of the kid's just got I don't even know, he's just self-motivated in a big, big way, and he wants to play well, he wants to do good, and right now you're talking about, oh, we want his jersey hung from rough rafters. This guy is a beloved player, win or lose this weekend, and I could not be happier for a player.
All right, guys, that's going to do it. Big games this week, Saturday and Monday, and you got to hope Kentucky's playing in both and winning both. For the managing editor of the Sea of Blue, Glenn Logan. For the editor, Ken Howland, I'm BC Thomas. We'll see you next time on the Sea of Blue podcast.
Oh, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. Young folks roll on the floor. Oh, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. Keep them hard times away from my door. Brother Gene is big and mean, and he don't have much to say. He had a little woman who he whooped each day, but now she's gone away. Got drunk last night, kicked mama down the stairs, but I'm all right, so I don't care.